Welcome everyone to this special episode of Kiwi Talks to celebrate the 5th anniversary of Doom Eternal. And to celebrate the occasion, I'm honored to be joined by one of the former animators on Doom Eternal, Chris Quintero. How you doing, man?
Good. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, this has been a long time coming. I've been actually been wanting to speak to you for quite a while, so looking forward to it.
It's really cool to chat with you.
Yeah. So I thought a cool place to start off would be with Glory Kills, because you did a lot of those. Did you get much freedom in terms of how you got to do the Glory Kills, or were you given specific instructions?
So, yeah, we had a lot of creative freedom. So my animation lead, Alan Rogers, he kind of headed up the thing. But, like, so we get assigned, like, we had this Excel sheet of all, like, the demons and, like, all different angles. So, like, I can't remember exactly. I think there was, like, 9 glory kills per demon. Maybe there's more. I haven't thought about it in a while. But, like, so you got, so in the front, there was, like, head, chest, and lower body. And on the each side, there was upper body and lower body. And on the back, there was upper body and lower body. And then it also had glory kills from the top. So quite a few. So, yeah, there's like this Excel sheet, and like you had every demon listed and like what glory kills need to be done. So like the people that were animating stuff, we just go down the list like, hey, I want to do that one. So, and we kind of just pitch an idea. And we also had meetings where like all the animators get together in a room and like we just brainstorm crazy ideas. And maybe you could rip the demon out and have a spine dangle, and like pretty crazy, really interesting meetings for sure.
Would you do that on a whiteboard? You'd brainstorm these ideas? Or would you do so it like body language, where you're like, oh, we should do this and pull the spine out like this?
Yeah, so like our lead, Alan, would like walk up, and we'd have a big, large whiteboard, and like we just pitch ideas, and I think he broke down ideas, and our producer, Matt, would, you know, write stuff down. And
yeah. So was it your idea to pull the cacodemon's eye out, for example? Because you did that one, didn't you?
I can't remember if it was my specific idea or not, but I definitely did a lot of eye ripping out animation.
Yeah, because there's that, and there's like the pain elemental as well. I'm trying to remember all of them offhand. But do you have like a favorite glory kill?
So I did most of the Marauder animations, and my favorite one was where you start punching the Marauder, and he catches the Marine's fist, and the Marauder thinks he's about to win, but then he gets stabbed in the face. That was my favorite one. Yeah.
There's so many good ones. And because I remember when Hugo appeared on Joe Rogan, he was talking about making sure that the blood and the guts and the gore and stuff looked like almost like Disney animation, like not too realistic. So I suppose you're trying to keep that in mind when you're working on that stuff, that it looks
cool. It's like super cartoony, like it's just over the top, just fun, you know. Like for the posing, like it's very classical Disney animation. Like we really wanted the silhouette to read automatically, so you initiate a glory kill. Like it's the pose is so clear that like you know exactly what's going on. So it's like the classic Disney principles of animation, like solid drawing, which is like a clear silhouette, timing, spacing, line of action. It's basically just classical Disney animation for the glory kills.
Was mocap used for most of the animations of the the enemies or the Doomslayer or any other character in it?
Yeah, there were some specific characters that were mocap, like the Marauder. He was a lot of mocap. We tried doing some mocap for the glory kills, but it was just like the pose was so stylized that like it was really hard to like manipulate the mocap to do what we needed for the glory kills. So there were several glory kills that started with a mocap base, but then we ended up modifying like a lot of it, so it became less mocap by the end of it.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. So would you ever film yourself in front of a mirror or film yourself in general to try and get an idea of how something should be animated?
Yeah, like as animators, we do that all the time.
Yeah, sure.
So anything that's like kind of realistic, we want to do like some film reference, but anything that's like over the top cartoony, a lot of times for glory kills, we can't really, you know, film it like ripping arm off or, you know, but yeah, we to make it feel grounded and real, like a real action, like it's really helpful to record yourself for sure.
Yeah. Cause I've always felt like Doom, even though it's kind of realistic, it's kind of not at the same time, the art style is kind of stylized, so you can get away with certain things. Like, you could exaggerate the animations more, I feel.
Yeah, like, it's funny. We were looking at, like, some boxing reference. You know, have you ever seen the boxing YouTube videos where they slow down, like, it's the high frame rate? Like, someone gets punched in the face? Like, the skin jiggles and, like, you know, some crazy overlapping act. It's one of the principles of animation is overlapping action. And, like, there's so much malleability to the face and body, like, when you see the slow motion. Like, really took advantage of that. Like, so whenever we punched him in the face, like, we really, like, pushed the jaw the opposite direction and, like, try to jiggle as much stuff as possible, and that really helps sell the weight and the power of the Doom Slayer.
Do you remember the hardest thing you had to animate?
Oh man, hardest thing. I guess Glory Kills is pretty tough because like it's really fast because you don't want to bring the player out of the gameplay, you know, for a very long time. So for like the lower tier demons, like the zombies and the tier one, you know, lower demons, like they're really quick and fast. But as you know, they get more powerful with the Marauder and you know the higher tier demons, we could make the animations a little bit longer. It's a you know a bigger payoff for the player to kill those larger demons. But yeah, so like just making them feel snappy and make so we did a lot of stuff at the beginning where. You initiate a glory kill, like you look in directions, and because it's a glory kill is basically just a tiny little movie. So we could do like an animation, like if they ever seen the behind the scenes where like you have a camera framed and like there's this pose, but if you turn the camera around, like the body is all contorted and stuff like that to make the pose look good. Like, so we did a lot of stuff like that in Doom Eternal. So just making everything read and fast and visceral, I think. Was one of the hardest things, I think.
Yeah, because I suppose you took the original Glory Kills from 2016 and then looked at different ways of how to improve on them, I guess, or
Yeah, so
streamline
there was
it.
a lot of glory kills where we would just take what was there and kind of just change it. So like the Doom Slayer had the Doom Blade at this point. So we could like take an old glory kill and just incorporate the Doom Blade. And then so yeah, we did a lot of that. Yeah.
Whose idea was to put the Marauder in the game? That guy pissed me off, man.
That's so funny. Like we did a lot of internal tests and like Hugo would bring in a group of people and it's like, hey, you gotta figure out a way to kill this Marauder because we wanna make it harder. Like there'd be groups of employees playing the game and then trying to figure out like ways to break the gameplay for the Marauder. And I don't know. I play the Marauder so much that like I feel like he's an integral part of the combat loop and the chess dance, you know. I know he, you know, some people hate him, but I don't know, I kind of have affinity for him.
Well, you probably played the game so much that you got so good at it compared to everyone else.
Yeah.
Particularly at the end, because you would have done quite a bit of QA testing as well towards
Yeah,
towards the end.
so animation by the end of project, like the programmers were mostly the ones checking stuff into the build. So a lot of the artists are kind of just like waiting around to do new things. So a lot of times at the end of a project, the animation team will just playing the game and helping, you know, break the game and find bugs. So like a lot of the animators got really good at the game because we were just playing it so much.
What was your relationship like with Hugo? What was it like working with him?
If I could describe Hugo in like one sentence is like badass nerd. Like it's so fun sitting in like dailies with them or like company meetings. Like he had a really amazing ability to like look at a pop culture reference like Terminator or whatever and just figure out like why is this key moment like impactful of culture? Like why does it resonate with everyone? He just like could break down those scenes and like extract what was meaningful about you know pop culture. It was just really entertaining, and he's you know really charismatic too. So it's just really fun to like listen to him you know articulate those sort of things. And then he also was really into jujitsu. So
Which
like,
you are as well.
oh yeah, I love jujitsu. He actually he was a big influence on in me getting into jujitsu. I don't think I've ever told him that, but I started jiu-jitsu like 3 years ago, largely because of like him just talking about it, and I kind of looked into it. But like he would talk about like, you know, the players, the white belt when they start out, and by the end of the game you're a black belt, and like just teaching you things throughout the game and progressing kind of like in a jiu-jitsu kind of manner. So that was another cool thing about Hugo. He like, I got a new hobby because just listening to him talk about it. Yeah, so it was one of my best bosses in my career, I think, so far. Like, have you ever worked in a company and the leadership is like, you wonder how they got there?
Yes,
like
all the time. Yep, totally.
Yeah, and like Hugo's the opposite. It's like he was like born for that role. Like he just fits in so well with the Doom franchise, you know.
Yeah, well, it makes me wonder who would take the mantle if he left.
Yeah, I don't know.
He seems pretty irreplaceable to me.
Yeah, like he's he's really amazing at what he does. He's like a really amazing artist too. So like when like a lot of times when you're working with a director, sometimes they're not an artist. So like when they're given feedback, they're like, "Oh, I want this," but not they can't really give specific what they want, you know?
They don't know how to articulate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's an artist, so he could like go up and draw like what he was thinking and like this you can how you can prove it and like have very specific notes. So from an animation team point of view, that was really cool.
Well, he always seems like energetic as well. He doesn't seem like someone that would need coffee or a Red Bull.
Yeah, definitely energetic for sure. Very charismatic. Yeah.
In fact, I think the only time I've seen him visibly mad was he was on stage and he was talking about the Star Wars sequels. Have you seen that? And he starts getting really angry because he's such a pop culture nerd, you know, and he's invested so much time into it that like he felt betrayed. It was quite funny.
Yeah, I've probably seen it at one point.
Yeah. What was it like working on the id Tech engine? Because that's considered one of the best engines, period.
Yeah, so I've worked on a lot of engines like Unreal, Unity, id Tech. So I have a friend at id, his name's Seth, and he's a programmer there. And he's worked in Unreal and other engines as well. And he describes it as id Tech is like a race car. Like it... So like if you get in like a family caravan, there's like the TV and like all the luxury stuff, you know. Id Tech is like it's like a this really super fast race car. Like it's designed for one thing. There's no like fluff. There's no TVs. Like from a programmer's point of view, like it's amazing tech and it does like runs amazingly well. From an artist's point of view, like so as an animator, you work with. You import animations and there's this animation trees and that sort of thing. So it's really fully functional, but like there's not a lot of bells and whistles that you get in like Unity or Unreal that's more artist friendly, you know? But it just took a little bit to get used to it. But like, yeah, so it was I actually downloaded, they recently released it a few months ago, id Tech for Doom Eternal.
Yes.
And I downloaded it and I installed it. I actually gave a talk at a game dev conference. I think the talk was called Doom Eternal or Glory Kills is like Disney, classical Disney animation. So I pulled up id Tech and I was going through all the old animations and it was fun and nostalgic just to look at all the old stuff. Yeah.
Well, because it seems like it would be amazing for programmers because it's a very well optimized
engine. Oh, yeah, it's amazing,
engine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I can see why... other people, well, I suppose programmers and other people in the industry look at it and be like, man, I mean, because they optimized it very well and then it worked on Switch, you know, like 2016 and Eternal. And I'm like, how the heck did you get that working?
It's
ancient tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really good engine for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my friends that's still there and I was telling about how I downloaded the Doom Eternal version of id Tech and, he was like, yeah, it's the animation tools have changed a lot in the last few years and it's a lot more artist friendly now, apparently.
Well, I suppose they're constantly upgrading the engine after every project. So I suppose with Doom the Dark Ages, they would have been doing that primarily before they went into full production.
Yeah, they're constantly updating even during production.
Yeah. So I know you're a Lord of the Rings fan.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know because the Malagog or Bob, as he's called. Was that influenced at all by the Balrog in Lord of the Rings, or is that just a coincidence?
Maybe there's influence like subconsciously, like I don't think I was actively thinking about it at the time. I animated the part Malgrog, like in the Ancient Gods DLC, where you walk up and he wakes up and takes the Doomslayer up to the Dark Lord crystal thing. But yeah, I don't think there was like a conscious, you know, thinking about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm definitely a big fan of Lord of Rings. I've actually just watched the extended edition, the first two parts with my kids. And yeah, so I'm brainwashing them to like Lord of the Rings too.
The extended editions as well.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
In one day? Or was this spread over multiple days?
It's been over several days, yeah.
Yeah, because what? Each extended edition is what? 3 hours? Three and a bit hours?
4 or more hours.
Jeez, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Did they love it?
I think the Two Towers was 4 hours long, if I remember right.
Yeah, and
which is the second one, yeah.
Yeah, and then what? Return of the King is close to 5.
Even longer than that. I don't remember how long, but it's really... Well, I'll find out pretty soon because we're going to watch it pretty soon.
Nice. I actually live about 40 minutes away from Hobbiton. It's like...
What?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And they just...
That's on my bucket list to do.
They originally had the facades built into the hills. And then you could just open the door, but there was nothing inside. But they recently actually made the interiors for the Hobbit Hole, so you can actually go inside now.
Wow, that's cool.
But... Yeah, it is a tourist trap though. There's people there all the time, as you can imagine.
Imagine.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. So even though I live close by, I don't go to it all the time. It'd be like someone living near the Statue of Liberty or something, and then they never go.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. But I wanted to ask about Doom the Dark Ages.
Oh yeah.
And your thoughts on it, man. Because Xbox just had the big presentation, the Direct, recently, a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
So they showed off all this new footage, but came for your thoughts, man.
And I have a slight FOMO of not getting the finish. So I did pre-production Doom Dark Ages a little bit before I left. So I had some slight FOMO, like, oh man. Fear of missing out of working on that game. But yeah, it was fun watching that video and seeing all my friends that kind of walking through camera. And Jerry, he's one of the level designers. He's been there at it for like, I don't know, forever. And he walked by, Marty and Hugh at the very end. That was pretty cool. And yeah, so the trailer looks amazing. So like, I saw a lot of the same stuff that was there when we were doing pre-production. So like, it's pretty cool to see Hugo's vision. Like, you know, it's pretty much the same from pre-production. That's pretty cool. I got to do some animation tests for the shield and the dragon and the mech. So it's really cool to see the fleshed out version of that. I really like the new mantra, stand and fight, versus like the rip and tear mantra.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Like Doom Eternal is more like acrobatic and parkour. Like, seems like Dark Ages is going to be more grounded and, you know, standing and fighting sort of thing. And I think that's cool. I think it'll be more easier for more people to pick it up as well. But it seems like they have the deep combat loop too. So it's not going to be, you know, like fluffy or anything. I think it's going to be a lot of deep mechanics into you. So it looks really cool.
I think Hugo referred to Doom Eternal as like being a fighter jet and then like...
Oh yeah, totally.
The Dark
yeah.
Ages, you're like a tank.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. But it looks so sick, man, because... Even when you add in the stuff like the mix and the dragon, because were you there when that was discussed early on in pre-production? Oh, we want to do this.
Yeah. So like Hugo was talking about having a shield. So like a lot of times in pre-production, like, well, we won't wait for the artist to like model, you know, whatever. We'll just like, and so Maya is the program we use for animation. So like for the shield, I just like made a quick like sphere and I put it on the Doomslayer and we started. I put the Hell Knight in front of the Doomslayer. I'm like, well, how can we use the shield with the Hell Knight? So I just did a quick animation test with that. And then with the dragon, I did some animation tests with that. And then the mech as well, I did some pre-visualization, like what would the mech do in an encounter and like, how would it feel when he's walking? And yeah, so that was pretty cool.
It looks like a throwback to Hugo's Pacific Rim days.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, first-person shooters are
I bet he's been itching to do that for years.
Oh, for sure, man. He's probably like, yes, finally, we get to do it.
Yeah, but he teased it a bunch in Doom Eternal with, like, you know, the stuff laying around in the background and stuff like that.
Yeah, so those were kind of like the prelude to this, I suppose. I mean, first-person shooters are quite hard to do when you start getting up there in length to try and keep it fresh and to stop it from getting monotonous. But Doom's been very good at that. And it looks like Doom the Dark Ages switches up the gameplay quite significantly, which is cool.
Yeah, I'm glad it's not just like, it's not Doom Eternal 2.0. Right? It's like, yeah, like they're doing like a lot of new stuff, which is, I think, will make the game feel really fresh.
It'll be good for you because you are only involved in a little bit of it, so you can kind of go in with fresh eyes. You don't know was made specifically.
I'm really curious to see how they do like the mace and stuff like that, and how that feels when you use it. When I was there, we weren't doing anything like that yet. So
I think the trippiest thing for me throughout the whole Doom Eternal lead up to release was the whole Animal Crossing Doom Eternal meme thing.
Oh, yeah.
That meme was that so came bizarre. Like, what was the vibe at the office when that thing took off?
It was like genius marketing for the marketing team. Like, it's like a whole new section of fans that came about from that crossover. So I thought that was really good for the Doom franchise, funny enough.
Yeah, but was everyone like, wait, what's going on here? Because it's just like total opposites.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw that like with Oppenheimer and Barbie, they pretty much copied that. Right? They did the same thing. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, really buzzy. So I wanted to ask, just a little trivia or favorite section, I suppose. What was your favorite level in the game?
So I beat the game in Ultra Nightmare. And so when I was going through Ultra Nightmare, I died like a bajillion times in Cultist Base. So like, I think I played Cultist Base so many times and I yelled at it so much that like it became my favorite level, just because I know like every square inch and like where every demon spawns, and like, you know, the soundtrack is stuck in my head from playing it so many times. And that's probably one of my favorite levels. And then I guess another favorite level is in the first map in Ancient Gods, where it's raining, and I love the atmosphere of that one.
Do you have a favorite boss?
I guess from the base campaign, I guess the Doom Hunter. First time fighting a Doom Hunter, you're in that space and you beat that first one. You're like, oh yeah, this is great. And then you drop down and there's two of them, you know? That was fun. And then I guess another one is from Marauder. It sounds like you don't like the Marauder, but I like the Marauder.
I just died on him so much. I just remember that was the only thing.
Yeah. It was so fun as a dev to watch people play the Marauder on streams and stuff like that. And then like be sitting in the office and like we're all watching, you know, people play it and rage quit over it. And and it was so cool when like these speedrunners found the way to beat the Marauder really quickly. And so that was a lot of fun to see players figure stuff out. And I guess another boss I liked was the Con Maker on the Ancient Gods. Like all different patterns that he level interact with the level. I died on him quite a few times too. that was fun.
You mentioned speedrunning. It must be real buzzy to see speedrunners pretty much like break the game and find all these ways to just be super quick with everything.
It's insane.
Unintentional things as well that you guys probably didn't even factor in when working on the game.
Yeah, what blew my mind is like, you know, speedrunners will hit the weapon wheel to slow down time, and they'll use those physics to like launch themselves across the map, you know? Have you seen those videos?
I've seen a few. I can't recall the specific one you're talking about with the physics wheel. I'll have to try and find it.
Like when you hold down the weapon wheel, it like slows down time. So they would take advantage of that and like go on a ledge or something like that. And I don't know exactly how to do it, but like they dash and release the weapon wheel at the same time, and they've like launched them across the map and.
That's crazy. So would you guys all sit around in the office and just watch speedrunners?
Like I don't know, like right after release, like we weren't doing a lot of work. We were just kind of watching, how the community reacted to things. So like I don't know, we just like walk around in different people's offices. Like Alan Rogers was our lead, he found this one video some fan made of like some trippy like rainbow color, like can't even describe it, but like he really enjoyed that. So we all kind of crowded in his office, and it was like mixed the different collages of Doom gameplay, and it was like this rainbow pattern thing. I probably look and find it, but he fell in love with that thing, and that was fun to huddle around and watch that.
What was your favorite music track in the game?
I guess I don't really know all like the track names, but like the BFG Division comes to mind.
Yep.
And then Metal Hell, that was a good one. The whole soundtrack's amazing. But
Yeah.
I was walking down the hallway one day, and I passed Chad Mossholder, who was the lead
Yeah.
audio guy, and Mick Gordon was behind him. So I got to very briefly meet Mick Gordon in the hallway, and that was cool.
He's very energetic, Mick is.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I thought he might drink a lot of coffee, but when I met him, I'm like, nah, he's just naturally like that. So, yeah. Do you use it for working out at all? Any fitness stuff that you use the soundtrack for?
Oh man, I used to all the time when it first came out, for sure. So at ID that we had a gym at the very low level, and
Nice.
so I would go down there like 2 or 3 times a week. We had a deadlift Wednesdays, and like so like a bunch of people from different departments would come down, and we all deadlift together. And so we played some OST there, and
Were you doing quite a significant amount of crunch while you were there towards the end?
there wasn't really a ton of crunch for my department.
That's good.
I mean, maybe there was a little bit, but if there was crunch, it was kind of like self-imposed. Like we really wanted to make something, shine or like polish animation that we didn't really have scheduled for, like just for our own personal. Just because we wanted to make it awesome,
Yeah. Do you have like a favorite memory or favorite story that people don't know about from the game's development? I'm sure you must have one.
Let me think about it for a second.
You probably got so many.
Well, this is pretty dumb, but like, do you remember that art thing that came out where like someone put a banana on a wall and taped it to the wall, and they called it art, and it made a lot of news and stuff like that.
Yeah, vaguely,
But that was years ago. But anyway, I thought that was ridiculous. So I took a banana from the lounge room, and I put it on the wall, and I put a big duct tape on it in the main hallway. And what I didn't realize is that the duct tape like ripped off paint, so I kind of got in trouble with HR a little bit. I walked in the HR office, and I'm like, I'm so sorry, I duct tape a banana to a wall.
I wouldn't. Well, I suppose how it depends on how much paint you ripped off. Was it quite a
It
bit?
wasn't a ton, but like it was pretty obvious because it was in like the main hallway.
Yeah. So they would have had to repaint that whole
Yeah, they
bit.
had to repaint it. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oops.
Another cool memory is like, so when I was in high school or college, I went to QuakeCon, and this was before I worked at it, obviously. And I met Marty Stratton, and like I was behind him in the line or something like that, and I got to talk for a little bit. And then I got to ID, and like a year into working at ID, I was sitting in my office, and Marty came to my office, and it was raise time. So like he would hand deliver like a little notice saying you got a raise. So it was just like mind blowing. Like, holy cow, just a few years ago, I was at QuakeCon and like talking to you, and now I'm one of your, employees, and it's just crazy 180. I don't even know what to call it, but that was pretty cool. And then like when I was a kid, my mom worked at EDS, which is Electronic Data Systems, which is just a few miles north of it. And she would bring me and drop me off to office, and I would play Commander Keen, and I just sit at her office when she was in meetings so with that, and she gave me Commander Keen, and so I got introduced to id when I was a kid playing Commander Keen. And when I worked at id when I first got there, just meeting all the guys that were actually there when they made Commander Keen, that was pretty wild.
Wow. So
Yeah, so
did you
just being
meet?
a fan of id and then like coming to id and seeing all these guys that were like there, that was pretty wild. There's so much history at id, and there was another room where there was a lot of Carmack stuff that was still there, and like he had
Really?
a bunch of his pictures of some of the cars he had and stuff like that. So just walking around id is just like this time capsule for game development,
It's like
so
a
that was pretty
museum.
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you get to interact with Carmack or Romero? Were
No,
they?
like Carmack was gone by the time I got there.
Yeah, but did they, well, of course they're kind of
Kevin Cloud
intertwined
was
with it.
there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Kevin Cloud was there.
Wow.
Yeah, so yeah, he had an office above me, so I got to interact with him quite a bit. Yeah, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. So I just had a few questions from the community. Maybe you can answer them,
Yeah.
maybe you cannot. This one's from Samnus Arendine. What is a great piece of cut content and what kind of crazy shit would the Doomslayer have done with it?
Cut content, man. Man, we were pretty efficient with like doing stuff that would actually make it in the game. Man, cut content. Well, I think in Doom 2016 they did a lot of the glory kills against the walls and stuff like that.
Yep.
And so we had to cut a bunch of that stuff. That sucked.
Was that just due to
So
time
that was,
constraints?
I can't remember actually the original reasoning for doing that. But yeah, so I remember looking through all the old animation stuff of the wall glory kills and stuff like that, and I was bummed that we had that got cut. Man, I'm trying to think of other stuff that got cut. So like for cinematics and stuff like that, by the time we got it around to animating it, like it was going in game, so a lot of that stuff didn't really get cut. Yeah, I don't think there was a bunch of stuff from animation, from my knowledge, that got cut.
Well, you probably would try and prevent any animation from getting cut because it would be quite costly. Especially when you're talking about cinematics, like cutscenes and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like yeah, by the time it was animating, like it wasn't going to be cut at that point.
Yeah, because I mean, Doom Eternal has way more cutscenes than Doom 2016. So.
Yeah, so like yeah, we'd be very iterative with cinematics and glory kills or gameplay. So like if it wasn't working early on, we'd stop at that point.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Next question is from Adam145. Did the team ever think of going for slower gameplay than 2016, or if you wanted an even more frantic game compared to what we got?
I think like even faster than Doom Eternal. Is that the question? Sorry, say it again.
Did the team ever think of going for slower gameplay than 2016, or if you wanted
Oh.
to have even more frantic gameplay compared to what we
Oh, okay.
got.
So it was kind of interesting to see how the fighter jet kind of took place. Like when I got there, like they didn't have the meat hook in place or the Doom Blade. So it just kept getting faster and faster the longer I was there. So yeah, I don't think there was in anyone's mind it ever goes slower.
Yeah, I suppose you got to
It's
be careful with.
it's add more jets to this engine at this point.
I suppose you do have to be careful with first person shooters though, that you don't go too overboard with the, I suppose, the frenetic movement, and so you cause motion sickness for people. Because I imagine there's a lot of
Oh yeah.
playtesting that's done in that regard.
Yeah, I think we did a lot of adjustments to glory kills because of, motion sickness. Like sometimes the glory kill, like if the camera moved too much, you could easily get motion sick. Yeah, so just kind of toning stuff back. for Glory Kills helped with the motion sickness, I think.
Does it?
But
form
it
the...
wasn't. Go
Sorry.
ahead. Sorry.
You go ahead. You go ahead.
Oh yeah, like, but yeah, I think I don't think there was any like slowing down, in people's minds.
Yeah, and I suppose with the animation, I mean, with the movement or any type of zoom or anything, does that fall on the animator? Does the animator actually control that, or does that ultimately fall on the designer or a programmer to control the movement in that regard to the camera?
Yeah, a lot of the, designers and programmers were involved with that, but like as animators, we like kind of, suggest things, we're not for the moving around stuff, unless Alan Rogers was my lead. I don't think he was going in there and tweaking that sort of thing. Like, variables to slow down or increase the player speed or not. Yeah, those mostly fell into designers.
Yeah, fair enough. Now we do have to talk about your game, High Fructose, because that's the reason you left it, right? Was to work on the game that is behind you on
Yeah.
the
Well, yeah,
poster banner there.
I would definitely still be an id if I didn't want to be an indie dev.
Yeah. But was that a decision that you made quite spontaneously, or had that been coming for a long time that you decided, I want to make my own game?
Well, ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be an indie dev. Yeah, so it was a long time coming. Yeah, so. Obviously, you can't work on a competitive project. Not that my game's going to compete with Doom at all, but like, in the same
Maybe it
field
will.
or whatever. Probably not. It's Doom's a whole nother level. Yeah, my game's a solo game project for the most part, so I'm not looking to compete with Doom at all. I'd be, get my ship sunk if I tried to do that.
Yeah. But you're handling everything except the music, right?
So, like, I do have some contractors. I have a guy in Canada that's helping me concept art, and a girl in Germany that's helping me with modeling. And then, but yeah, I'm doing a good chunk of it. And then I'm a composer. He's another Wisconsin guy. He's doing amazing work with the music. Yeah, so I'm doing a lot of coding, the animation, level design, lighting, that sort of stuff.
So we should probably explain what the game is,
Yeah.
right? Yeah, what sort of game it is, the gameplay, the gameplay loop, I suppose.
Well, it's funny, my initial idea for the game. When we were doing Glory Kills, we looked at reference for how to make, Glory Kills feel satisfying.
Yep.
And one of Hugo's references was actually Fruit Ninja. And because
Ah.
yeah, so Fruit Ninja, like, ever played Fruit Ninja?
Yeah.
Okay. So like it's a really simple game, but like, it's very satisfying to chop the fruit. And like Hugo would reference that, like, I want it to feel like snappy and satisfying. And in the back of my mind was like, that's interesting, like a first person Fruit Ninja game. I guess my inspiration was there's a indie game called Brotato, which is like a roguelike. It's really great genre for indie devs to get in, because so one of the pillars of roguelites is procedural generation. So levels are procedural generated, so I don't have to like make a ton of levels by hand.
No, yeah.
And then so that's one of the facets of roguelites, and another facet is permadeath. So when you die, you have to start over at the very beginning. See that I found Brotato, and I was like, I'm gonna make a Brotato Fruit Ninja game, because I wanted to be realistic with my scope. I'm like, what can I realistically do with my time and not having a big team? See, I just looked at other games and saw how big their team was, and kind of, okay, well, if they can do it with a small team, then I'll venture in that kind of direction.
So, was a lot of the stuff you're working on, you had to self-teach? You had to teach yourself how to do certain things before you even started certain aspects of it?
A lot of it is just like, I need to do this, I'm gonna have to learn that day.
Watch a YouTube video.
Yeah. I went to school at Savannah College of Art and Design, and we did a lot of generalist training, so I got to learn modeling and a lot of stuff at school. So that helped a lot.
Yeah.
My focus was animation, but I got to learn a little bit of everything in school.
That's cool. So how far in development are you? If you had to give it a
So the
percentage.
So I'm hoping they go Steam Next Fest sometime. Or it's going to be, I think, July or June, the summer.
Yeah.
And then after that, hopefully release after Steam Next Fest.
How did you decide on the length of the game?
So I'm kind of modeling it after Brotato. So Brotato has 20 waves.
Yep.
And so my game, my main campaign is going to be 20 waves.
Cool.
Yeah, trying to hit the audience right there.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose you'll be heavily marketing it as it gets closer to release. I don't know if you've got some marketing strategy planned out.
I'm kind of learning as I go, man. It's like drinking from a fire hose, all the stuff you have to do for indie dev. Yeah. Yeah, my current plan is just like once I get 3 months out from release, I'm going to start marketing hardcore. I don't have a huge budget for marketing, so it's more like I'm going to reach out to streamers and enter festivals and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Have you spoken to any of the marketing team at id for ideas?
Oh, I do have a friend that he's a community developer. Yeah, like they do things very different than indie developers in their marketing thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they got the big budgets and
of course.
Like, teams of people that figure out the exact motto for your game and that sort of thing. So yeah.
I mean the marketing,
but that's okay. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
I think as an indie dev, you don't have to have like this like in a AAA, you're supporting hundreds of people and like my profits don't have to be as big as a AAA studio.
Totally.
Yeah, so my marketing strategy, like it's gonna be very different than like a AAA studio. It's more like guerrilla warfare marketing.
Yeah. I think the hardest thing with marketing these days is just piercing through the noise. Like just getting,
oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, just see it, right? Because there's so many games being released all the time and you're competing against everybody else's attention in terms of where theirs is allocated to, right? Because there's so many indie games as well. So that's the hard part.
Yeah, they're like, especially this year, is like the most amount of games released on Steam ever by a long shot. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of noise you gotta cut through in.
Yeah, I was always quite surprised with how good the marketing campaign was for Doom Eternal. I mean, Hugo was appearing everywhere. He was on Joe Rogan.
Oh, yeah.
It was buzzy.
Yeah. I learned so many stories from watching his marketing stuff that like I didn't experience because, you know, there's hundreds of people at id and he has meetings that, you know, I'm not a part of. So it was fun hearing different stories from like different perspectives of him interacting with other devs that, you know, I didn't even hear about until I heard the interview.
Yeah, because I suppose, as you've mentioned before, you would have had limited access or limited collaboration with maybe designers or programmers. Because I imagine with AAA games, everything kind of gets siloed a little bit. So you kind of have animators in one area, programmers
yeah,
in another.
Totally.
Yeah, designers in another. And there might not be much interweaving or cross collaboration.
My first game job, I worked on a Transformers video game, and their method for developing was they would have a level team. So they would have a programmer, animator, a designer all sitting together. And at id, it was very much like the whole team sits together sort of thing. So like I met the most amount of people from different departments just by going down to the gym, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, because like every department would go work out, you know, and like Denzel, I think he's the lead modeler now. Denz was always in the gym. So that was cool to meet, you know, modeling guys at the gym that way. It was like kind of it was very open at id. So like you could go up and talk to anyone. So Marty was kind of in the middle of everyone. Hugo was in the middle of everyone. So like you could go out and talk to him if you wanted to. And you just kind of had to make it an effort to, if you wanted to go meet other departments, you kind of had to put that on yourself.
Yeah. But I suppose in the case with Hugo and Marty is they'd be extremely busy. So you'd probably be a bit reluctant to just walk up to them and be like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be get old for them pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they've got a lot on their plate.
Yeah, I would interact with Hugo a lot during like dailies, like for animation review and stuff like that. And so I, at the end of production, the animators got to play a lot of the game. And me and my friend Peter, he's the lead gameplay animator right now. We got really good at battle mode. So we got invited to the battle mode meetings, and Hugo would do play tests with battle mode, and I got to interact with Hugo a lot through just battle mode play tests and stuff like that. So I got to talk to him a lot through that.
Yeah. I mean, the Doom the Dark Ages won't be having multiplayer because they want to focus more on the single player, which I actually think is good. I think multiplayer is getting oversaturated, and it's very hard to get people's attention on something and get them to move away from whatever ecosystem they're currently in.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, especially what happened with Concord, right? So,
oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think battle mode was really fun and cool. I don't think it had the big impact that they were looking for, you know? So I think it's smart that they just ditch the multiplayer and do what they're really good at.
Yeah, and focus more of the time and resources into the main campaign. Because it looks amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
Looks phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Doomslayer of a cape. Oh, my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. But the cool thing is, because it's arcade-y, so you can kind of get away with stuff. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about it.
Yeah. Yeah, Hugo at one point was talking about, like, when they were revamping Doom 2016, is like, they could do whatever they wanted to do, because, like, in the original Doom, is just, like, you know, these pixel stuff, and, you know, is a franchise that's wide open to do whatever the heck you want.
Yeah, you're not really bound by realism or certain, I suppose, realistic directions that a lot of Western franchises have. I mean, Doom, in a way, kind of reminds me of like the arcade Japanese games from back in the day.
Yeah.
Even though it's like a Western design game, it has some of that Japanese design philosophy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, I'll wrap up there and I'll let you get back to work on your game. If anybody wants to stay in contact with what you're doing and any updates on High Fructose, where's the best place they can do that?
Yeah, I'm on X or Twitter, whatever you call it nowadays. if you search Chris Quintero on X or Twitter, and then, so that's a good place.
Yep.
I'm a Doom nerd, so I do a lot of posts about random Doom stuff, and
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, all the best for the future. I hope High Fructose is a huge success.
Yeah, thank you.
Hopefully you can pierce through the noise or the marketing and stuff.
Yeah.
That's the plan,
yeah,
right?
It's good to finally connect with you.
Yeah, yeah, because we've been connected for a while, so it's good to finally do this. But all the best, dude.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Cool. All right, that is the show, everyone. Make sure you share, like, and subscribe. And until next time, stay safe.